Hello and welcome to the Creating Superfans podcast, where you learn how to turn your customers and employees into superfans. I'm your host, Brittany Hodak, and I'm a speaker, author, and entrepreneur obsessed with all things customer experience. Here's the thing. We're living in an experience economy right now, and regardless of the size or age of your company, or even the products or services you're selling, one thing's for sure. If your customers aren't telling their friends about you, you're in trouble. If you want to create superfans, being great is no longer good enough. You've got to be super. This is the show that teaches you how. Today's guest is my friend and maybe the one person on the planet I would not want to go toe-to-toe with in a game of who cares the most about experience, because this guy just might win. He is the founder and CEO of Experience.com. He's on a mission to redefine the way the world thinks about customer experience, employee experience, and the all-important interplay between the two. And it's not just talk. He has helped design and build the platform that's making it all possible. In today's episode, he's going to talk about what every company, large and small, can do to transform into an experience-led enterprise and inspire every employee to become an experience architect. My conversation with Scott Harris right after a word from today's sponsor. If you're looking for a proven system to make more impact and income, I want to highly recommend that you talk to my friends at Brand Builders Group. Brand Builders Group are the best in the world at helping people find their uniqueness and building on it to monetize their personal brands. Right now, Brand Builders Group is offering free brand strategy calls to everyone serious about taking their personal brands to the next level. Just visit freebrandcall.com/Brittany Hodak to request your call. I've been a customer for 5 years, and I can tell you the team is absolutely incredible. You may have even heard co-founder Rory Vaden on a past episode of this podcast. They've created a system that really will help you get clear on the shortest path to grow your impact, your influence, and your income. So go to freebrandcall.com/Brittany Hodak today to schedule your free strategy session. Scott Harris, thank you for coming on the show today. It is so great to have you here.
Hey, Brittany, how are you? I got to tell you, I miss Nashville. Used to come all the time, haven't been a minute. And every time I talk to you, I think about Five Daughters and Hattie B's.
Well, thank you for coming on the show. I always love when we get a chance to talk because I feel like there aren't that many people who love experience in the way that I do and can
get out. I paid $1 million for it.
You did. You literally own experience at experience.com. So, let's kick things off by talking about what is experience.com. As the man who could have done anything in the world with the domain experience.com, tell me about what you did and why.
What is experience.com? Experience.com is an experience management platform. It's really what it is. If you're building an EX platform where you want to connect to every moment in your employee journey and then map it into a life 360 view of every employee, if you want to connect that to Glassdoor, Indeed, and power your recruiting reputation, right? We're an EX platform. We're a CX platform in the same way, connecting to any moment and powering customer experience feedback. But we do it very differently, right? We have behavioral and stuff and secondary workflows. And for us, it's a system of voice, whether it's EX, whether it's CX, or it's online reputation. It's the same customer, right? And so asking the customer to do things like legacy tech has one system for reviews, one system for your reputation, your listings, another system for social connectivity, another system for collecting CX surveys, another system for EX surveys. And we go into these companies and they don't have an experience practice. So everyone's making decisions in silos. I know that I'm just sort of talking too much here.
But I think let's dial it back a little bit and talk about millennia, there were businesses that existed with very few data points. because unless someone was like taking that chisel to that tablet or taking a pen to paper, information existed only in the memories of the people that were driving that experience.
Yeah, competitive business drivers were very different.
Yes.
Right? The things that caused me to beat my competition were product and price.
Yes, product and price, very much commodity driven. And over the past, let's say 60 years, as things began becoming digitized, it was about, oh, we've got to find a way to take something that is happening in the offline world and turn it into ones and zeros to record it. And I think that...
I like that. Good way to put that.
And that's really what it was, right? It was like, how do we figure out how to tell a computer what is happening? How are we creating a virtual representation of a feeling or an experience that is happening in the real world? And I think over the past 20 years, as everything has, you know, gone first to internet and then to mobile, what we have seen is a proliferation of tech products that narrowly focus on one part of a bigger picture. So whether you're talking about a customer experience, whether you're talking about an employee experience, there are a lot of tools that have been developed to focus like with laser intensity on one little thing. And what I believe has been detrimental about that is over the past 15 or 20 years, what we have seen is the over siloification, I think is the like correct technical word to use, the over siloification of decision makers within businesses, because they are looking very closely and yet very narrowly in scope at one part of a customer's journey or an employee's journey, because they have truth. They have data points that speak to that one thing, but they're missing the forest for the trees. They're not seeing the larger picture. And as someone who is leading a business, particularly somebody who is leading a multi-location business with many, many employees, your challenge in 2023, 2024 becomes not how do I get data? It's how do I make sense of all of the different data that I have? What matters, what doesn't, you know, I think it was Albert Einstein or Ben Franklin, one of those like smart dead guys from the past who said, not everything that can be counted counts and not everything that counts can be counted. So like, how do you make sense of all of that? And what I love about experience.com and what I love about your practice of experience management is saying the world has changed, business has changed. We have to figure out how to create the digitization, not only of reputation, but also of business and experience management. How do we create signal in the noise? How do we create calm in the chaos? So with that, I would love for you to talk a little bit about how the sort of still emerging field of experience management matters and why, regardless of the size of your business, whether you've got one location and 20 employees or 1,000 location and 200,000 employees, why this matters for what your business is in a world that we live in where you are essentially what the internet says you are. How can people running businesses of all sizes get smarter about not just capturing clues and signals about the experience their customers are having, but then using those to continue to refine and evolve the experience of those customers and generate that as social and experiential capital to drive more business?
So interesting. Let's focus a little bit on some data that I think does matter in the conversation. So what we believe is that people buy differently today. We know this, right? We know
people buy differently. I would say people buy differently than they did 3 years ago.
That's right. COVID really impacted the way people buy. So I've been in real estate and mortgage and financial services for years. And prior to COVID, if Brittany Hodak called me and referred me to an insurance agent, I mean, I bet if you did it, I would just do it now anyway. I wouldn't even look them up. But let's just say, prior to COVID, if I said to you, do you know an insurance agent? Your mind would say, where? And I would say, I'm moving to Nashville. I need a homeowner's insurance agent in Nashville. And so your mind would do like a million, process a million pieces of information. Your mind would say, do I know any insurance agents local? Do I know insurance that have the product? And do I know insurance agents that that are good at it, going to deliver a great experience? So if I'm going to trust them with this referral, you know, 9 or 10, let's say. And so you're processing through 9 or 10. It's still a very complex thing that's going on in your brain. That's very simple to us, right? Now, what's happened is that's the way like 60 to 70% of the business a real estate agent get and a loan officer get. That's just to be the way it used to happen, right? We'd run the numbers and I tell you, between 60 and 70% was referral based every time. It was all that mattered was building realtor relationships if you were a loan officer, right? That's all that mattered. Is now I will tell you this, that much fewer people buy that way. Like, I still ask you for a referral, but if you gave me a referral to an insurance agent, the first thing I'm going to do, I don't know why, it's just my nature, is now to look that insurance agent up. I'm not even
sure.
You know
why I think it is? Do you know, I was thinking about this the other day. So an earlier episode of this podcast is an interview with a gentleman named Andy Cockburn, who's the CEO of a company called Mention Me that deals in peer-to-peer referrals. And I was thinking about the behavioral change of everyone after my conversation with him. And you know what I think was the beginning of the end? Dating apps. Dating apps have trained us from, and I say us, I've never been on a dating app. I'm very fortunate that Jeff and I got together like before that was a thing. We've been married 15 years, so I never had to like do any of that. But the idea that you can see everything you need about a person to make a decision about whether you want to talk to them and swipe right or swipe left has, I think, trained people to think very transactionally about others before they meet them. Give me everything I need to know instantly so that I can make a decision of whether or not I want to like make the next move or not. And I think with referrals, it is very much that, because people who depend on referrals and professional services environments don't know how many people swiped left. You don't know how many people landed on your Facebook page, your Instagram profile, your website, and thought, meh.
And that was a hell of a transition. You just use swipe. I think we should slow down and make sure that everyone that listened to heard what you just said. It's basically you're saying you don't know how many people are swiping left on you.
You have no idea how many people took one look at your profile online for 2 seconds, 20 seconds, 3 minutes, whatever, and said, nope, not for me. You didn't capture their email. You have no idea who they are. You're not going to be able to follow up with them. They are not in your funnel. You are not in their consideration set, but they are not even in your cognitive awareness.
But even if you told me about an insurance agent and I looked up your insurance agent, it's going to show me the three competitors. And if your insurance agent doesn't look as good as those other two, Google's driving my behavior there.
Oh, right? Absolutely. I think like one of the most savage things that like I used to be like, I can't believe that this is a thing now, is like 15 years ago, 10 years ago, when you would type the name of anything and then just put versus, and Google would give you the drop down with like the five competitors. And you're like, thanks, Google. Like, you don't even have to do your homework now to like find other competitors. And now, I don't know about you, but my behavior with ChatGPT is like, it has replaced all of my research.
Oh,
like,
I don't write an email anymore without ChatGPT.
Give me five companies who do this. Tell me three things that do this.
Yeah.
Right. So yes, I think behavior has changed greatly. And my little, you know, hot take on dating apps aside, I think the outcome is that people are expecting things with more immediacy, and they know that there are so many other options for everything that exists, that in a way we've commoditized people, right? It's like, well, if this one's not right, there's a bunch of others. So you
The dating app is 1% of a drive towards behavioral reliance on algorithms rather than ourselves. I'll give you one other example. The blue dot. The maps.
Yep.
The blue dot. You know, I don't know if you guys would remember the 80s, but we used to have to remember how to get places. Right? I can go somewhere now 7-8 times, not tell you how to get there.
Yeah.
Right? But we used to have to remember how to get there. We used to have to think about directions. We used to have to say, remember the conversations? No, turn left there. When you run up to here, turn left, go up a mile and turn. When's the last time you had that conversation?
Yeah. So I one time did not know I was driving the wrong direction trying to get back home to Oklahoma from a concert in Kansas until I saw a sign that said, "Welcome to Nebraska." And I was like, yeah, Nebraska is not on the way. And it was because when I had like pulled off to get gas, I had got on an interstate going north instead of south and didn't realize it because interstates look like interstates. And so I drove for however many miles. But yeah. And now think about like, when's the last time you went anywhere without Google Maps on? My mother-in-law was just teasing her husband.
I'm a Waze guy.
Well, you're a Waze guy. Like my mother-in-law.
I play the game on Waze all the way as I'm driving. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And she, like my mother-in-law, we were all out for dinner on Sunday and she had said to my husband, like, why are you using Google Maps? Like, you know how to get to my house from here. And he's like, yeah, but I don't know which way is going to be fastest. And she's
That's right.
And he's like, well, why would I want to take 17 minutes to get to your house if I could get there in 13 minutes?
Yeah. They'll tell me if there's traffic on the, that way. Right.
Yeah. Like, so, I'm not going to miss 4 minutes when technology has created a solution for me to like get there in 13 minutes.
So let's arrive at a point here that I think is really important. And it is that the rules have changed, right? That's really what we're saying is
all
that
the rules have changed.
Everywhere you turn, they're replacing the way we think with algorithms. They're replacing and making it more effective. And then they're doing different things to drive our behavior. So just like you described with the map, if it was just the same direction every time and it was the closest, you wouldn't pull the map out, right? That's not a driver of the behavior that Waze wants. So Waze came up with a way to say, we can save you 2 minutes if you go a different way because there's traffic. Now they've driven the behavior they want and they've given us a little bit of value that causes us to give them the behaviors. Now that's what's happening everywhere. Wherever you turn, people, the game has changed and it's all about your behavior. I mean, we created a game to help people win online so that when they come in, it pops up, points fly off and fly onto their score and they can see themselves jump the competition on search because we know what it takes to win online and we want to drive the behaviors that power our users to win online and to power them to do the activities that cause them to win online, right? It's value to power outcomes. And I'm just telling you, the point is the rules have changed. And if you know that, then you have to say, how do you win based on today's rules, right? When I said to you, the way you think about giving me an insurance referral, it's literally, Google's turned that into math. Google has said, do I know somebody that has that product? That's a relevance factor. Do I know somebody who is local to the searcher? That's a proximity factor. And then they say, do I know somebody's going to deliver the customer great experience? That's a prominence factor. So you have three factors, thousands of components that Google puts into it, and yes, if you deliver great experiences and do a high volume of transactions, you're still going to lose unless you use the math to your favor. Because people are going to look you up. And the rules have changed. And so you got to play by different rules. And the winners find a way to win. And so I see it every day. I was on a webinar 2 days ago with the top performers. We had 350 people show up to a webinar. They were all the top 1%. If I asked the people below 10% to show up to a webinar, that help their business? Much fewer percentage of people. When I ask the rock stars to show up to help their business, they all show up. Right. And that's
well,
what
and
we
I
need.
Think what's ironic about that is, and I see this across all, you know, all types of business, all industries. When you ask below the 10%, they don't show up because they tell you they don't have time. They can't make the time to do it.
People doing 50
so
loads
busy.
They make time.
Right. They're so busy running their business when in reality, they're misallocating their time because they don't understand the rules have changed. And you can spin your wheels and spend a lot of energy focusing on the wrong things when you don't understand that winning in 2023 does not look like winning in 1993, does not look like winning in 2003, does not look like winning 3 years ago. Because in an experience economy, the rules are constantly changing and you are constantly being compared, not just to your direct competitors, but to the types of experiences that are being created by totally different professionals, totally different industries. Like nobody now says, oh, you can't tell me where we're at with this process. That's cool. I'll wait. People are like, wait, Lyft can tell me how many wrong turns away from me Patrick is from picking me up. And Domino's just told me who put mushrooms on my pizza. What do you mean you don't know what's going on with this project?
Yeah, I just Janet just put mushrooms on my pizza, and I know that.
I know Janet put mushrooms. What do you mean you don't
I'll
know
give you
how
another
many
one.
Days until my appraisal happens?
Our 1% reply to reviews at a 45% rate. Everyone under that replies to reviews at an 8% rate right now.
Wow.
Look. It's all math. The problem is it's complex. Winning isn't easy, right? So let's just focus on this one problem. How will people look their best and win their local market when someone finds them online? I love your comment. You are what the internet says you are.
I remember people used to do this like weird thing. Like when you were like, oh, when's the last time you Googled yourself? People were like embarrassed or like, I never Googled myself.
Everybody Googles themselves.
And it's like, why not? Like, it's not a question of do you have a personal brand or not. It is a question of are you driving it or is someone else driving it? So to anyone who says, I have no idea, you know, what shows up, my question is, do you just not care enough about your customers to know? Like, do you not care enough about your prospects to understand what the beginning of their journey to get to you looks like? Scott, hopefully everybody listening is on the same page that you are what the internet says you are. What do you do to help influence what the internet says about you?
Okay. So let's say you're one loan officer trying to win at Google's math, right? Let's just take one. It's very complex, but let's just take one. Now, and we've automated it, but I'll give you the problem statement at the beginning. So one loan officer that's trying to win would need to claim an update with the exact information, their name, address, phone number, title, category, hours of operation, products and services. You would have to have, let's say, 40, 50. I mean, there's 300, but 40, 50 profiles, Angie's List and Google and Yelp and Bing and Alexa, and you want to be found. So you have to make sure that Google knows that you have a location where you have a location, you see, and it can't just be on Google because people spam Google. And so Google looks at three tiers of citations. They look at tier one, which is those primaries that you heard me say, like the really important ones like Google and Yelp. They look at tier two. Those are your industry specific and those others like Thumbtack and Angie's. I'm not even sure if Thumbtack indexes, but you get the point. There's a lot of where YP.com and these others. And then there's tertiary citation is like your blogs and your posts and those other things. And all of these things, Google searches and looks for signals that you exist in a location. So remember, it's math. We're all competitive, right? We are sort of autonomous route to market employees, right? We're out there getting our own business, building realtor relationship, whatever it is. And so you want to make sure that you get found, and that when the search engines, when someone searches you or searches for a loan officer in your market, let's pretend there's 400. Okay, there's 400 loan officers in that market. Okay. How do you make sure that you're in the top three? So you got to be 398 people. Okay. You got to be one, two, or three. So you got to be 398 people. So you got to get your profile everywhere. And then the second thing they do is they look at, do you have the product that the customer is searching for? VA home loan. They're going to look at your Google and all those other places to see if you say you have VA home loan. Then they're going to go to your primary citation. Do you know how many people do not have their products on their own website?
A lot of people.
Most of our customers, if somebody's searching for a VA home loan and they went to their primary website, their primary Amber Ernst page, whatever it is, or, you know, Giuseppe's page, you would find that most of them do not have hours of operation. So Google doesn't even know if they're open. If they go to their own site, they do not have products and services that they offer. So Google's not going to give you that result because you don't even have it on your website saying we offer it. It's like if you are Best Buy and you don't say you have cameras, they're going to send the camera shopper somewhere else.
Yeah. And right? The person looking it up is going to be like, oh, well, all right, let me, if they haven't updated this, that tells me either A, maybe they're not still in business, or B, they lack attention to detail. And as a prospective customer, what we're really doing when we're trying to make a decision is looking for reasons to say no, looking for things that make us eliminate someone from our consideration. Right. Set. So somebody like me, I don't think it's like super judgy to say like, oh, well, this person is not likely to have a high level of attention to detail to my needs. They can't even get their own stuff together, right? That is the conclusion I jump to very quickly in my mind. And I think a lot of other people do as well.
Yep, I think so.
We're just looking for reasons to exclude people.
So, and then the last factor is, are you any good at it? Mm-hmm. You see, so think about the math. You got to share your name, address, phone number, hours of operation to hundreds of websites in order to actually get points. Let's say they're worth points in the Google algorithm. So we got to look at it. Ones and zeros, right? Yeses and nos. Are you there? Is it an exact match? Do you have the same title? Do you have the products? And then are you any good at it? So I would say that's the tiebreaker. So now let's say you have 400 and they've whittled it down to 100 people in your area that have the products and are close enough to their searcher. So how do you win? It's got to be Google has to know that you're great at it. So it's how many recent reviews and are you responding to those reviews? Google actually reads the reviews. Google and all the search engines do read them, looking for keywords, looking for products and services. And that's it. It's now math that's been turned into, see, used to be like backlink farms and all to try to trick the algorithm, but they released Panda, they released Hummingbird, they released Penguin, they released all these core updates, and all these updates are getting closer and closer to what Brittany Hodak did when she referred me to an insurance agent. Do I know somebody close? Do I know somebody that has the product? And do I know somebody that would deliver a great experience? And that's what the math is doing. Doing that for one person, really hard. Doing it for 1,000, impossible. Without a platform like ours.
Amazing. So let's talk about the human side of it for a minute. We know that somebody is more likely to leave a review when they've had an exceptional experience or a terrible experience, right? Like there are very few 3-star reviews in general across the internet. Like not a lot of people are like, let me take time to tell you about this forgettable experience I had. Something that was totally adequate happened and I want to tell you about it, right?
I don't review myself when I brush my teeth every morning, right?
Exactly, right? Yeah. So it's about the human drivers to create an exceptional experience, to exceed someone's expectation, and then make it very easy and automatic for them to leave that review. You guys have the tech totally covered. Let's talk about the human side of it for a minute, because I really do believe when it comes to experience management, a lot of it is about that balance of high tech and high touch. So high tech covered in spades. Let's talk about the high touch. Let's talk about the last time you, Scott Harris, had an experience that turned you into a super fan or made you say, wow, I've got to tell someone about this? What's the last thing that sort of stopped you in your tracks and made you think, this is worth telling the world about?
I really, really dig AI.
Okay.
And I use it. We use it everywhere. We have the perfect responses to surveys built into our automation so that people can get suggestions from the AI. We have the AI PII redaction. We have AI analytics on their website. I mean, we love AI. And so many people are charging away from it, saying, oh, it's wrong and it's doing this, it's doing that. Yeah, yeah. If you're running away from it, you're running in the wrong direction, right? The other day, I got an email from somebody trying to sell me something. And it had a video snippet, and it had me and my screenshots and a lot of in the little snippet. And so I was like, all right. And it was like one line. Hey, I know you're busy. I created a video. I'd love to see if this is a good fit for us to partner together to help grow your organization. So I clicked on the video and it pops up a video and a guy's talking to me and talking to my name and going through screenshots and going through my website and going through his website. And he's just saying, and then Scott, we would do this and this. And then he gets to the end and he said, oh, by the way, this is a sales pitch for an AI video generation company. I didn't do this video. His mouth is moving. His face is on the screen. They're my screenshots. And he said, we do 1,000 of these a night, and 1,000 of these create 25 demos for us. And I know it must be true because I booked a demo because of this. He didn't shoot this video. Blew my mind that, and I know you said the human side of it, and I've totally botched that, but I love.
No, because a human had the idea to create that and built that tool.
I remember when you did it one time for me, and that's what really blew me away, is that you sent me a box, and I opened this box, and it had a book in it, and it had a screen, like an iPad. I know it was not an iPad. And when I opened it, it started playing a video from you. And I thought to myself, that video can be done at scale now with AI. Because, I mean, I've never had that experience before. I've never had that experience after. You should tell that story, but it was such a great experience. I got this box from you. I opened it. A screen started playing. There was a gift in it. And I just, when I saw that AI sales video, I thought, they've found a way to automate that at scale. We're going to do that now. We want to get out ahead of it. So for our company, because it allows me to share this awesome tech with a lot more people and allows me to sort of get in their offices, getting in their living rooms in a way that's highly personal.
Yeah.
And I think it's the future. I really do. We're leaning into it hard and fast.
I love that example. And I think you crushed it, even though it's not human in a way we would traditionally think about it. And I think a lot of people are evolving their thoughts. Another guest that I had on the show this year is my friend David, who is the CEO of a company called Handwritten. And he does handwritten notes at scale. And I think several years ago, people were quick to dismiss it as like, you know, almost deceptive, right? When something appeared to be handwritten, but it's not. But I am of the belief that if you use the technology correctly, as long as the message that you're still sending comes from a place of good intent and you're not spamming people, then this is just the evolution of what has happened for years, right? It's like people made a big deal when like people stopped writing in cursive and wrote in print. Like there were the people who were like, how dare you? And then when people started typing instead of writing in print, it was like, oh my gosh. And like now people clutch their pearls that like somebody is using a robot to, you know, type a handwritten mailed note from your phone. But like the world changes and the people who adapt most quickly are the ones who enable experience management at scale. How can people get in touch with you, Scott?
Look, we work for HR teams, for sales teams, we connect marketing workflows. We're literally a system of voice, right? Where if you're looking for CX, EX, or reputation, we're the place that companies go to use this super advanced AI-based tech to manage experience across every group, every department, every customer journey, and you can stand it up very quickly. So I'd love to talk to customers if they're looking at stepping up their experience game. And you can just come to experience.com. You can click create a demo, or you can just email me if you want to, scott@experience.com, and I'll get you the right people.
And I think a note that I want to kind of end on is, if you don't have one definitive source of truth for everyone at your business to refer to about your experience management, are you really managing experiences at all? If every executive is looking somewhere else to glean and gather information, you're putting out lots of little fires and not realizing that, you know, there's like sparklers coming from the sky. So if you don't have one holistic source of truth, location, dashboards that are shared across your business, then you may be trying to win the wrong game.
If you're not using voice to power behavior, if you haven't created your own blue dot internally, right? If you're not driving behavior internally that powers the outcomes, right? If you're not changing the way your counter agent interacts with the customer through a seamless CX lever that powers behavior, that powers, that drives the outcomes, then you're behind. If you're not using voice of customer to, then those indexes to pay your people, to drive behavior of your people, if you don't have a CX component going into your payroll system, right, you're already behind. If you're not using voice of employee with automation every quarter, every week, every other week, here's a training, everything you do should be connected to voice, empowering behavior and driving business outcomes. It's not just collect data anymore. It's not just collect data and stare at data anymore. You put data in motion to power your business. If you're not doing that, you're behind.
Amen. Well, if you're not putting data in motion to power your business, make sure you reach out to Scott. He's going to help you win, not just today, but as the world and the rules continue to change. Mm. Scott, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Brittany. It's always great to connect with you.
All right. That's all the time we have for today's episode of the Creating Superfans podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Now, remember, if you're a super fan of today's episode, you can help us out in a big way by leaving a review and a rating wherever you get your podcasts. It may seem like a little thing, but it can make a huge difference in helping others discover the show. Now, until next time, remember, super fandom is a two-way street. Show your love for your customers and your employees, and they'll love you right back. We've got an exciting show lined up for next week, so I hope we'll see you right back here. Bye-bye.